defending liberty 1 hour at a time, and broadcasting from the RWB Network Studios in New York, you're listening to The Rhino Report. Always right.
Let's get ready to rumble!
I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
Son, your ego is writing checks your body can't cash.
She got chunked. You are very rude.
If you want to turn yourselves into a greasy spot on a country road somewhere, go right ahead.
And now, here's your host, The Rhino.
Hello, hello, hello. I am The Rhino, and this is my report. Today, March 11th, 2016, and yes, it's Friday. It's finally Friday. The weekend is upon us here in New York. It has been really nice the last couple of days. 60, 70 degrees. I'll take it in March. You know, I'll even take it in June, to be honest with you. I don't like 80, 90-degree temperatures. 60, 70, perfect for me. But we have a pretty action-packed episode today. A lot to get to. So firstly, CNN hosts the year's least most interesting debate. And now, is Rubio starting to campaign for John Kasich a little bit? Plus, Trump gets a new endorsement, Hillary looks like the sad clown, and we have a special What You Need to Read segment coming up at the end of the show. But first, we need to do the same thing we always do and salute our country with the Pledge of Allegiance. Alright, the kids with the Pledge of Allegiance always here on the Rhino Report. Keep sending me your submissions of your son or daughter or their class or their Cub Scout or Girl Scout troop saying the pledge and tell me who they are. First name is all I need, or group name, state, hometown. We'll get them on air and they can hear themselves salute our country. So, you know, before I get into the debate, I wanted to talk about the debate. Everyone's talking about it, even though it was the least most interesting thing on TV probably all year. I wanted to talk just for a second about this Erin Andrews thing. Now, Erin Andrews, of course, is a reporter. She was at a hotel, a Marriott hotel, where someone flipped around the sight glass in the door and filmed her naked getting in and out of the shower. Since that episode, her career just blossomed, getting millions of dollars to be a reporter for ESPN and Fox and all this different stuff. But she was suing for $75 million, and she wanted that money from the Marriott for allowing this to happen, and then also from the man who did it. Now, he already did, I think it was 8 months in jail or whatever it was for doing that, for violating her privacy. So now she's going after him civilly. Well, the jury comes back and they award her, I think it was, $55 million, 28 to come from the Marriott Corporation and 27 to come from the guy who perpetrated the act, who we've learned he lives in his father's basement. So, obviously no way to pay that kind of money, but I was a little surprised. $55 million. Now, I never condoned spying on somebody. I think it's a terrible thing. But this really launched her career. Now she's, of course, one of the co-hosts on Dancing with the Stars. If you watch that kind of garbage, she's on that. She makes millions and millions of dollars, and now she's going to take somebody who served his debt to society and now make him pay her more money? It's ridiculous. And now here's my next question. Here's the next question. If she gets $55 million for somebody taking a 15-second video of her, what do we get from the federal government for spying on us? Our metadata, our emails, everything we do. The NSA, we've learned from Snowden is collecting all this stuff, right? Now there's different police departments across the country have technology in place to grab your text messages and things like that. Now the government knows more about me and you than a couple of boobies will ever tell somebody about Erin Andrews, right? They know our social security information, our email address, who we talk to, who we text, what we say, what our friends' phone numbers are. They know more about us than we'll ever learn about Erin Andrews. So what are we entitled to? What can the government pay us for spying on us. Now, we've heard that there's drones flying around, and they're not really collecting any information, the government says. They're just testing them out. Yeah, right. If you buy that, I have a bridge to sell you. But I had to get that out of the way. It was really bothering me the last couple of days. It was. $55 million is an awful lot of money for a violation of privacy, right? I mean, how many peeping Toms get caught every day and don't owe the victims that kind of money? You know, I don't know. You guys may have a different opinion on it. That's just my opinion. I have a common sense approach to it. Should there be some sort of tort, you know, make her whole again for what she's lost? Sure, but what did she lose? What did she lose? She gained. Since the video came out, she became wildly popular. And maybe it wasn't for the best of reasons, but it still happened. So I don't know if there's any tort to be applied here. But I'm not a lawyer. I'm just a simple man from New York that if anybody wants to film naked and put it on the internet, you're more than welcome to, because I could easily use $55 million. I could use it. So the invitation's out there. Not that anybody wants to see that. I'd be lying if I say they did. All right, let's talk about this debate a little bit. Let me get to my notes here. I'm all thrown off. I'm all thrown off talking about millions of dollars. But okay, so this was in Miami, home field advantage for Marco Rubio. It was hosted by, or moderated, I guess you could say, by Jake Tapper. Now, Jake Tapper wants to pat himself on the back here and say what a great job he did by keeping everything to a minimum. That didn't quite happen. I'll tell you why that didn't happen. But one of the things, this thing got off to a very rocky start for me, okay? I had a big problem with, I said, okay, it's 8 o'clock, I'll turn on CNN, and I'll watch a little bit of pre-debate stuff and then watch the debate, because that's what I do. I'm a politi-nerd, so that's what I do on Thursday nights. Now, here was the problem I had. You turn it on at 8 o'clock, and Anderson Cooper is there, and he's talking, and he tries to be as, we'll say neutral as possible during these debates. He's done a pretty good job. Some of the people he brings on to do a little color commentary, they're not so much. But he does a pretty good job of trying to stay neutral, just as George Stephanopoulos tried to at that New Hampshire debate on ABC. Anderson Cooper, much better at it. But so they have a countdown running in the corner. It says 29 minutes till the debate, 28 minutes, 20 minutes, 15 minutes, and then they say, when we come back, the Republican debate. I said, okay, great, get my popcorn, get ready for this thing, settle in. We come back at 8:30 from commercial break, and it's still an hour away. I mean, a half an hour away. They lied. They lied to me. They said it was coming on at 8:30. You get to 8:30, the countdown's finished, and boop, we have a half an hour more of pre-debate stuff for you. This was a ploy to get you to watch the whole hour of Anderson Cooper. That's what that was. They knew it wasn't starting at 8:30. They should have run that countdown clock at 8:30, leading up till 9 o'clock, but they didn't. So for me, it got off to a bad start. Because what I do in that scenario is I turn the TV, I turn the channel. I don't watch that. You lied to me. I'm not going to watch it any longer. So I put on something else stupid for a half an hour. Maybe like Flip or Flop or something like that. But this debate, when it finally got going at 9 o'clock, it had a very mild tone to it. Now, there's a few reasons why it had that mild tone. You have people on the Trump side saying, well, it had a mild tone because Trump wants to look more presidential. And at this point, he's the front runner. He doesn't have to be that outspoken anymore. He has to appear presidential, and he has to be there, right? So that's why maybe Trump was a little more mild. However, Trump would have struck back had the insults been launched at him. Now, Rubio and Cruz, also very mild-mannered, very staying on topic, not getting into the size of body parts or hands or what have you. Cruz not necessarily trying to litigate against Trump right there so much as he did in the previous debates. Now, this hurts, for the most part, hurts John Kasich, because John Kasich stood out as being this kind of reserved guy, very calm, very mild-mannered, and here it was a wash. Here it was a wash. So for the first 171 debates they've had, John Kasich might as well have been doing a remote feed from Rancho Cucamonga, because you didn't even know where he was, right? And now you still didn't know where he was because everybody else was miled around him. So it just didn't serve him that well. Some of his answers when it came to education really, really scared me. And I'm getting a little off topic here, but he was saying how in Ohio, they do a lot of aptitude testing and they'll get kids into vocational programs as early as seventh grade. You're talking about 12, 13 years old. You're telling a kid at 12 years old he can't go to college, he has to be an auto mechanic? Now, there's nothing wrong with being an auto mechanic. I totally get it. We need them. You know, and in fact, I wish I was better at it. But a kid who's 12 or 13 years old, you're putting him in vocational training? I don't get that. That to me sounds a lot like what the socialized education is in Europe, where they tell you, hey, listen, you're just not going to go to college. You know, college is free, but we're not going to pay for it for you. So you can go and you can be a welder, you can be a plumber, you can be an electrician, which are all great jobs. But a lot of welders, plumbers, electricians, some of them went to college. Some of them did community college. Some have done, continuing ed credits at colleges, have in some form gone to college. Not all, but a lot have. Some have gotten their four-year degree, decided they wanted to own a plumbing company or a mechanical firm, and they went and they did that too. But I don't like the idea of telling somebody that they can't go to college. And when you put a kid in a vocational program in seventh grade, that's what you're telling them. Because there is no, you know, there is no auto mechanic college. There's no tire college, right? They don't exist. You can go to UTI, you can get a specialized certificate or something like that, but there is no, you know, Cornell University Division of Auto Mechanics. They just don't have it. They have quantum mechanics maybe, but not auto mechanics. So that kind of scared me when Kasich said stuff about that. I wanted to get into some of the highlights of each person, but you know, to be honest with you, there weren't that many. There really weren't that many. But getting back to why it was so calm, I wonder if this had something to do with Rubio and Cruz maybe looking for that VP nod. Now, there aren't a lot of people who are all that thrilled about a Trump-Kasich ticket. Now, at this point, I'm assuming Trump is the nominee. I know we're some delegates away, and I know some of you are screaming at me now, but let's just assume, for the sake of having fun on a Friday, that Trump is the nominee. A Trump-Kasich ticket doesn't exactly get your, you know, warm your cockles. Kasich's a nice guy. I think he'd fit in really well as a postmaster general. I don't know that VP is the nod for him. And by the way, whoever had 3 seconds on the John Kasich family tree pool, he said it in his opening. He mentioned his family. So whoever had 3 seconds there is the winner. But maybe Rubio and maybe Cruz. You know, they've said a lot of nasty things about each other. But remember, the nastiness between Trump and Cruz is only about a month old, right? It just started right around maybe the debate right before Iowa. So maybe we're talking a month, 6 weeks old. That's how long they've been sparring. And Rubio, not a whole lot longer. Remember, Rubio only started feeling his oats about 3 weeks ago. And a lot of this gets washed away, right? We'll talk about the Carson endorsement in a little bit, but no matter what you say during a primary to each other, it's kind of hard to use that against them in a general, because they're just going to say, listen, I was trying to be the presidential nominee. So a lot of that gets wiped away. A Trump-Cruz ticket, well, that warms a lot of cockles. It does. A lot of people would be very, very excited about that. You would have a tremendous outpouring of voters, and you would still have that support from the left, well, moderate left and middle, as Trump is getting now, okay? A Trump-Rubio ticket, well, that warms the cockles of your GOP establishment, right? So maybe there's something there. Instead of saying, well, we wanted to have a calm debate so that we could get and talk about the issues, maybe that wasn't necessarily the case, because even if every debate up to this point they haven't talked about the issues exclusively, we know their positions. This, like I said, it's like the 172nd debate, whatever it's been. We know their issues. We know where they stand, okay? So I don't think that had anything to do with it. Maybe they're trying to warm up a little bit. Maybe that's the case. Maybe I'm 100% off. Or maybe it's just me wishing that there was going to be a Trump-Cruz ticket. Maybe that's my pipe dream here. Rubio's best moment came when he was talking about Cuba. Now, I didn't like Donald Trump's answers. We have to make a deal, make a deal, make a better deal. That actually drew some laughs from the audience because he kept saying the same thing. Trump kept saying, we need a better deal, we need a better deal. Okay, we get it. You like to make deals. I understand that, okay? But, you know, Rubio had some great points when he said, you know, listen, we'll talk to Cuba when they stop persecuting journalists, when they stop imprisoning people for their beliefs, when they have open elections. And yeah, these are good points. This was probably Rubio's one of his best moments to date, in my opinion. It took this long to happen, but at the same time, this was one of his best moments. He didn't interrupt. He just, you see, he stood there, he raised his hand, winked at the moderator, whatever it was, and he answered the question. Now, by the way, Dana Bash, I mean, I have a tough time listening to her without having my ears bleed, but she was trying a little gotcha questions, whereas Jake Tapper and Hugh Hewitt, not so much. But she was trying. I'm convinced Dana Bash in a former life used to chase around Smurfs. I'm convinced that's who she is. But getting back to Rubio, he looked in that moment, in that little 30-second moment, he finally looked presidential, in my opinion. But too little, too late for Marco Rubio. We'll see what happens with his campaign. We're going to talk about some things that are a little bit off with his campaign here in a few minutes. All right, Cruz, his best moment in these debates has always been when he looks directly into camera and he says, the first day in office, I'm going to rip to shreds the Iran deal. That's always been his best moment. Now, that's not his best moment anymore. And the reason for that is because Iran wants to rip that deal to pieces now. They don't want anything to do with it. They got their money. They got the $150 billion from us. They got the $7 billion for the 10 soldiers they held hostage. And now they have billions of dollars in contracts with European Union countries and companies. So yeah, they don't want the deal either. They wanted it for a couple of months there where they could get a lot of money. So it's no longer something to say you're going to rip to pieces. What are you going to do? Take the money back? You can't take it back. You can place sanctions on them, and that's done a world of good over the last 20 years. It's gotten us to this point. Right? So that is no longer his best moment. And I'm a little surprised he went there with that, because that's always the part where he gets very poignant, right? That's when he looks and he squints into the camera and he tries to have his Reagan moment. It didn't work this time. Maybe it worked for the casual observer, but most of Cruz's supporters are not casual observers. Most Cruz supporters are very well aware of what the political climate is, not only here, but abroad. So that didn't work for me. I don't think it worked for a lot of people. He started sparring with Donald Trump over the trade. Okay, Cruz being a free trader, and Trump saying he likes free trade, but we have to win with deals with China and Japan and wherever else. Now, here's the one thing I don't think Cruz understands, and where Donald Trump is 100% correct. And to think he's not would just be a spin of the facts. Now, I give Cruz a lot of credit. I think Cruz is a great candidate. I may even endorse him on Monday. But here's the problem. If you place a tariff, let's say Trump wins and Trump places a 45% tariff on China on their goods coming in, okay? Cruz says, well, that's just going to raise the cost of goods for people. So we're going to pay, at Walmart, you're going to pay more for a widget, 45% more, because they'll just increase the price of the widget. Well, and I'm using the term widget because those of you who've taken business classes know you always talk about widgets, right? Here's the problem with Cruz's statement. It may raise the price of that widget, but it raises the price of that widget enough that now the American-made widget gets purchased instead, right? And more competition now develops in the marketplace to develop things in the United States. That's what that tariff does. Because if you see two things next to each other, if you see crayons and you see Chinese crayons, and Chinese crayons used to be cheaper, so you used to buy them, but now they cost more, well, now you'll buy American-made crayons. All right, that's what the tariff does. That's what it does. And yeah, will they try to pass the expense along? Sure, they absolutely will. But we've gotten to the point in this country where our products are not more than 45% more expensive. So it will push the price of the Chinese products above the price of the American products. And then now, as people start purchasing more American-made products, you'll have more entrepreneurs trying to bring products to market. Okay? I know it's a little convoluted there. But Cruz being a free trader, he's totally in support of NAFTA. I think we've all heard the rumors about Heidi Cruz. I don't know how true they are. There are rumors that she's in support of this NAU, the North American Union, which would be similar to the EU, the European Union. I don't know if that's true. I've only heard that in certain circles, so I'm not going to give it any validation. But Cruz really defending NAFTA and free trade, it doesn't help it in my eyes. It doesn't help that rumor. So Trump is 100% correct. If you put it 60%, it doesn't matter. We don't need the Chinese goods. There's nothing they make in China that we can't make here. Trump doesn't always say it the right way, right? He says it thinking you know that you know the end result of the argument. He doesn't connect the dots for you sometimes. So that's why I'm here. I'm connecting the dots. There are plenty of things that I think Trump was very weak on last night. He was weak on Common Core, okay? He didn't really have his facts straight about it, but facts have never been a problem with Donald Trump or his supporters. So it doesn't really matter. Common Core, of course, the states had to adopt it. And, you know, four of them haven't, or did and then repealed it. But the states were kind of bum-rushed into this. Ted Cruz is 100% correct when he says that. Now, it is up to the states to get rid of it, and some states are getting rid of it. They are trying to modify it. And I know here in New York, Governor Cuomo has stepped back a little bit from that. Now he's pushing more for this $15 an hour stuff, but I'm not going to get into that right now. I could do a whole show on New York and Andrew Cuomo. It would not be difficult. You know, the Common Core argument is an argument that Republicans are leaning on, and at the end of the day, it's really kind of a straw man, because it is up to the states. Now, there is a czar that oversees a lot of this, so it gives the illusion that the federal government is in charge of it, when in actuality, it's not in charge of it. It just sort of implemented it and said, here's a thing, why don't you guys adopt it? Both candidates sound a little weak on that. That is up to the state legislatures. It's up to the state assemblies. It's up to your local governments. It's up to the PTAs. It's up to the parents to get together and pull their kids out of these tests, you know? So that's what they have to do. Not everything can be solved on the federal level, which I think is one reason why John Kasich does get a little support when it comes to that. So that's where they were a little weak. Kasich had a Kasich night. Kasich, they were talking about Social Security, and Kasich said, well, most teens now are more likely to see a UFO than see a Social Security check. And my response to that is, I think you're more likely to see a UFO than you are to see John Kasich in the Oval Office. Social Security is an issue. It's definitely an issue. It needs to be taken care of. It needs to be funded. I agree with Donald Trump that we really can't change it. But we have to find funding from somewhere else. We have to make cuts, whether it's the IRS, whether it's the EPA, whether it's whatever it is. It has to be cut. The Department of Education, something has to be cut. And you can make enough cuts. And maybe you can cut some salaries of senators and congresspeople. And right there, you can find a lot of money to now put into Social Security. Private plans are not a bad idea. At the end of the day, this thing was not meant to survive long term, and it was not meant to survive when you had a tremendous population of retired people and a small workforce, 94 million Americans currently out of work, many of them able-bodied, and that out-of-work number is really what's the big problem with Social Security. You know, four people working have to pay for one person on Social Security, so when you have 94 million Americans, 20% of able-bodied men between 18 and 60 years old not working, that's the issue. That's the real issue. You get people back to work, all right, then you will have less problems with Social Security. So we got to get people back to work. That's the big thing. That's the big thing. So people are calling this debate a little boring. Why was it so boring? Well, here's sort of what happened, okay? The RNC finally figured out after 8 months that a feisty, knock-em-down, drag-em-out debate benefits Donald Trump. Now, the RNC has never been quick on the uptake. So here they are trying to now get a debate together that doesn't play into the hands of Donald Trump. Donald Trump won all the debates that really got nasty. Really got nasty. So the RNC trying now. This is really a last-ditch effort. They wanted to change the format, okay? And CNN is happy to oblige because the ratings won't matter, right? It'll matter for the next debate. There's supposed to be two more. Who knows if they're going to have them or not. But the ratings are going to be better for this debate anyway. They know if they host a boring debate, it'll only hurt the next network involved. So what they did to try to make this thing a little bit more placid was they let the candidates respond a minute and 15 seconds as opposed to just 1 minute. They left the responses to an attack to 45 seconds, which is 15 seconds more than it was before. You know, CNN wanted to focus on policy-only questions. Give them credit, there were no real gotcha questions here like we saw on CNBC and MSNBC. They also wanted to minimize candidate interruptions. The organizers spoke with campaign managers and asked them to really consider not interrupting each other. So that was something else that was done both by the RNC and CNN to try to get this thing a little calmer. And then what they did was, before the candidates took the stage, someone from CNN came out and they said, you know, welcome to Miami, thanks for being here. However, anyone that is disruptive during the debate, whether they're cheering too loudly or overtly, they will be escorted out. So applause, support your guy, but let's try to keep it a little classy. So they did that. And it worked. You didn't hear any big whoops and hollers and cackles like that debate in Houston. You heard those people that were obviously plants for Rubio. And I think enough people were talking about that the following few days that CNN and the RNC, it crossed their mind that maybe that just seemed a little too obvious. It was a very good debate. It was substantive, and you heard a lot of things answered and questions asked. I mean, they asked more questions this time around than probably any debate to this point. Maybe the first debate, because there were like 120 candidates on stage, so they had to ask a lot of questions there. But even Donald Trump said this was a very elegant debate. It went over well, and he was happy with it. But this was an attempt by both CNN and RNC to try and derail Trump, just thinking, hey, listen, he was so good in these knock-em-down debates. Maybe we'll fix his wagon here and give him a nice placid debate. And when it comes down to substance, he won't have anything to say. Well, he actually had a lot to say, and I think he did really well. Did he win? I don't know. I think him and Cruz probably tied for the win. But Cruz and Trump both said they are the only two candidates on that stage that can win the nomination. I was a little surprised to see Cruz say that. Cruz hasn't been that outward about that in public anyway, maybe in his private rallies. So that was good. You know, the two men really defined themselves. And hey, listen, it was informative. I didn't quite fall asleep. I fell asleep probably listening to Carly Fiorina talk about Ted Cruz beforehand. With Anderson Cooper, she sounded like 100% sour grapes. This is why Carly Fiorina didn't get very far. She's just not likable. And you can yell at me all you want for saying that, for me saying that. She doesn't come off as likable. Maybe in person she's very likable. I have no idea. But whenever I've seen her on TV, which is where most of us see her, she is just not likable. And when she came out supporting Cruz, I'm almost a little surprised Cruz wanted that endorsement. She comes out on Anderson Cooper, and she sounds like sour grapes against Donald Trump. So that kept me awake a little bit. And yeah, so let's see where the polls kind of stack up. They're not looking so hot right now. Actually, you know what? Let's do this. Let's take a break because we have 2 days of polls to go over. So we're going to take a break. Now, during the break, what you can do is you can go over to Twitter and you can give me a follow at Rhino on Air. That's at Rhino, R-Y-N-O, on Air. Or you can always shoot me an email, give me your thoughts, your suggestions. If you find an article that you like and you want me to talk about it, shoot me a link to the article. It's rhinoonair@gmail.com. As always, you can find the Rhino Report on iTunes and Podbean and Stitcher and TuneIn and Spreaker. We're all over the place. We're also on Red State Talk Radio Studio B, and we are on ICRN, which is the Conservative Radio Network. We're all over the place, folks. You can always visit rwbnetwork.com, and you're going to see articles there by myself and by Tina. We have some great stuff there. We have some sweatshirts and some mugs. I'm always self-promoting, especially before breaks. But yeah, during the break, you know, go check it out, and we'll be back in about 90 seconds.
You are listening to the Rhino Report.
She got chunked.
Always right. Now streaming on Red State Talk Radio.
You are very rude.
Hey guys, your friend and your host, The Rhino, here. There are three ways you can get involved with The Rhino Report and the RWB Network. Here they are. Listen up. Number one, you can be a writer for one of the fastest-growing grassroots conservative media outlets out there. Send me a submission, and I'll read it, and we'll get you published on the RWB Network website. We see hundreds and hundreds of unique hits every single day. Number two, if you want to hear The Rhino Report in your local area, all you have to do is go to your local radio station's website and find the program director's email address. They're always pretty prominent there. Send them an email, say you want to hear the Rhino Report on your local AM or FM station, and I guarantee you, if just one person emails the program director, they will find me and we'll be on your airwaves. The third way to get involved with the RWB Network and the Rhino Report and actually make a little bit of money is if you have a little bit of sales experience or even none at all, shoot me an email. We're looking for people who want to sell some advertising space. The show is growing and so can your bank account. So those are three ways to get involved with the RWB Network and the Rhino Report. I'll see you back in about 20 seconds.
Talk radio the way the founding fathers would have done it.
I'm just a man trying to make his mark on history.
Red State Talk Radio.
This is Jeff Carlisi from the band 38 Special. Let us never forget that police lives matter.
All right, welcome back to the Rhino Report. I am your host and your friend, the Rhino. Thanks for sticking with us during the break. All right, let's do some polls. There's a lot of polls out of Florida. If we start with yesterday, yesterday's Suffolk University poll on the Republican side in Florida shows Trump at 36, Rubio at 27, Cruz 19, Kasich 10. The Fox News poll out of Florida yesterday shows Trump at 43, Rubio 20, Cruz at 16, Kasich again at 10. That's Trump with a 23-point advantage in that poll. And then a Washington Post Univision poll. This has Trump at 38, Rubio at 31, Cruz at 19, Kasich at 4, Trump with a 7-point edge in that one. And then if we go to today really, all the polls, they average out to about a 13-point lead for Trump. That's a Mason-Dixon poll, a Florida Times Union poll. There's a bunch of them out there. So, essentially, Trump with some big leads in Florida. Now, the Rubio campaign says, well, if Ted Cruz wasn't in the race, then we would be getting a lot more votes and we'd be more competitive in Florida. They're already setting themselves up for the defeat on Super Tuesday, or Super Tuesday 2, right? That's what it is. Here's the thing. None of the Cruz supporters, or a very, very small amount of them, would actually go over to the Rubio camp. Most of them would probably go into the Trump camp. So to say he's taking all the votes away, and that's what the pundits are saying on Fox News and CNN and MSNBC, they're 100% wrong. That's not the case. You can't assume that every percentage point that Cruz has would be going to Rubio. And really, at this point in the race, had Cruz not had such a good showing in Texas, Rubio could still be calling for him to drop out. But at this point, when Cruz says that Rubio should drop out, that really, that makes a whole lot more sense. If this is head-to-head, if it's head-to-head and you have Trump versus Cruz, it's awfully close. It's awfully close. And at the end of the day, I believe the supporters of one would support the other if it got to that point. Now, Rubio is going to stay in as long as he can, which may just be Tuesday. Maybe he loses Florida Tuesday and the RNC or the establishment GOP say you're out. Maybe we'll insert Mitt Romney for a few states. He's already registered in a couple of states. Kasich's going to stay in. He's going to grab delegates where he can. The GOP, in the worst way, wants a brokered convention so they can drop in their white knight, as I believe it was Cruz called it that, which their white knight would be either Paul Ryan or Mitt Romney. That's who their white knights, so to speak, are. They want this thing to go brokered. They don't want Trump. There's a lot of animosity towards Trump. We've talked about this ad nauseum. But really, these guys are in just to take delegates away at this point. I think Kasich really just wants to win Ohio. I think even if he wins Ohio, he may just bow out. I don't know. What else? There's some more polls over here. We have North Carolina. No, I'm sorry. We have Missouri. Missouri has Trump 36, Cruz 29, so only a 7-point gap there. And then you're down to 9% with Rubio. You know, see, here's a guy that says he can beat Hillary Clinton, but in the states that she does really well, he does very poorly in. Right? He does very, very poorly in. Now, Rubio and Cruz, here's the problem with them on a national level. They'll get all the requisite red states. Your Oklahomas, your Kansas, your Texas, your states that always go red will vote for Rubio or Cruz. The difference with Trump is that he puts New York in play. He puts Michigan in play. He puts New Jersey in play. Heck, he may put New Hampshire in play. Then you're not relying on, okay, well, the Democrats always win these, and the Republicans always win these, so we have to look at Ohio. We have to look at Pennsylvania, or we have to look at Florida, right? It puts more states in play. And at the very least, it makes the Democrats spend a lot more money in other places that they normally wouldn't allot for. So that's what Trump does. Not necessarily a bad thing. So, what else? Maryland. Maryland, you have Trump at 34, Cruz at 25, Kasich 18, Rubio 14. So Trump a 9-point advantage in Maryland. So you can make the argument, if Rubio's not in here, Cruz may surpass Trump in Maryland. So it's not looking good for Rubio, not looking good for Kasich. Kasich has the governator in his corner, though, with Arnold Schwarzenegger, so maybe that's something to be said. That may play a role come June 7th, if it's down to June 7th and someone doesn't have the 1237 they need going into the convention, California can play a big role. California hasn't played a big role in a long time, all right? And most of the delegates out of California are bound through the whole process. So when I say John Kasich built his campaign for a long term, and I've said that a couple episodes in a row now, he may be looking at California. Most of their delegates are bound for the whole convention, okay? That's very important to note that. All right, so those are the polls. Today, we had a preview last night. We had a preview on CNN. CNN was reporting that Dr. Ben Carson would support Trump, and then even in the debate, Trump said, I'm going to announce an endorsement tomorrow from Ben Carson. So it wasn't like this Chris Christie thing where it was an emergency press conference and we saw Chris Christie saunter out. this one was kind of spoiled for us, but it's okay. I had thought that Carson would have supported Cruz. That was my, I don't know, my thought 2 or 3 weeks ago. Carson supporting Trump is not a bad thing. It makes sense, Carson being an outsider and all, supporting Trump. They didn't really go at it. Nobody really went at it with Carson. You know, mainstream media is making a big deal about how Trump equated Carson to a sex offender or whatever by saying he's pathological. Listen, all's fair in love, war, and politics. I've said it before. That was back in September. That was when you had all the issues with he tried to stab somebody with a screwdriver and his mom with a hammer. Listen. It doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. Carson said, there are two different Donald Trumps. There's one you see on the stage, and then there's one who's very cerebral, sits there. You can have a good, very good conversation with him. I believe that. I believe Donald Trump is pretty cerebral. It just doesn't always come across that way. So, listen, this is a good endorsement for Trump. It's not a bad endorsement. You know, Carson also said it's extremely dangerous when political parties attempt to thwart the will of the people. He's been saying this on the campaign trail. He had said many times that he was running at the will of the people. So he, of course, is now concerned about a possible brokered convention or some shenanigans at the Rules Committee may make to try to parachute in a Mitt Romney. You know, Carson may even bridge the gap between Trump and Cruz. If you have to draw supporters from one to the other, if it comes down to saying, listen, Trump needs Cruz support or Cruz needs Trump support, Carson may be the guy to bridge the gap. Now, that may be a little forward thinking of me right now, but he really could have gone either way. I think that stuff with Iowa, with Cruz, with those voter violations, and then saying that Carson was dropping out, I don't know if that played a huge role in who Carson supported. And I think that's water under the bridge at this point. Because Carson, let's be honest, his campaign started to really have a tough time back in September, October. He was not going to rebound after Iowa. There was really no path to a nomination for him. And he was in no danger of winning Iowa, even with those possible, you know, issues with Ted Cruz. The voter violations and of course, everything else that happened there with his campaign saying he was dropping out, Carson dropping out, those helped Cruz. They didn't thwart any kind of victory by Carson. So I think water under the bridge there, and I think he could be the bridge. I do. So while Trump is getting the endorsement from Carson, Rubio's director of communication, Alex Conant, is on CNN telling people to get this, telling people to vote for John Kasich in Ohio. So his director of communication, Rubio's director of communication, is telling people not to vote for Rubio in Ohio, but to vote for John Kasich in Ohio. So we're following the Mitt Romney format, right? Vote for Rubio in Florida and vote for Kasich in Ohio, and we can broker the convention and I can be the savior. Well, it looks like this is setting up as maybe Rubio's out. That's what it looks like to me. It looks like maybe it's his out. So maybe this is Rubio's way of bowing out gracefully after Florida and then supporting Romney. Because this is what Romney started. It's what he said in his little speech from the University of Utah. Now, Conant also said this on the show on CNN. He said this when he was questioned, because the CNN person said, are you sure? Is that what you mean to say, to vote for Kasich in Ohio? And he said, yeah. My answer is John Kasich is the one candidate in Ohio that can beat Donald Trump. That's stating the obvious. So if you're a Republican primary voter in Ohio and you don't want Donald Trump to be the nominee, John Kasich is your best bet. That's coming from the communications director of the Marco Rubio campaign. I can't stress that enough. If you're a Rubio supporter, you have to look at this as being a stab in the back. You've dedicated your time to telling people about Rubio, to campaigning for Rubio, to supporting Rubio, and here's his own director of communications telling people not to vote for Rubio in Ohio. That would offend me quite a lot if I was a big Rubio supporter. So keep that in mind. This is how the establishment plays their game. It's the anything but Donald Trump campaign. And make no mistake, if Ted Cruz was in first place right now, it would be the anything but Ted Cruz campaign. So if you're a Ted Cruz person, don't be laughing, because this could be you, and it might be you. All right, what else we got? Let's talk. We have to blow through, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 more things in a matter of 10 minutes. We can do it. All right. Clinton is in a lot of trouble, okay? Now this guy, Brian Pagliano, he was the IT person at the State Department. He set up the server in Hillary's basement. He has all the inside information of who used what device, when they used it, where they took it, what the passwords are. He's the gatekeeper here. Well, he has immunity, and he apparently is spilling the beans, and a person close to the investigation is saying he is a devastating witness. Somebody also said here, Brian Pagliano is a devastating witness and, as the webmaster, knows exactly who had access to Clinton's computer and devices at specific times. His importance to this case cannot be overemphasized. That's a confidential source. This is all from Catherine Herridge. She's a reporter for Fox News. She's very, very good. She's one of the few people, and you know, at this point in time now, that is still very credible on Fox News. And listen, Hillary can't escape this, because even during that debate with the two nights ago, the Democrat debate, Jorge Ramos, who is a big liberal, whose daughter works on the Hillary campaign, he even asked her. He said to her, he says, if you get indicted, will you drop out? And Clinton didn't answer the question. She said, my goodness, that is not going to happen. I'm not even answering that question, because she doesn't answer questions about this anymore, right? All she says is, I did nothing wrong. I never sent or received emails that were marked classified, when we all know that she signed a non-disclosure agreement in January of 2009 saying that she understood that classified information could be marked or unmarked, as well as verbal communication, okay? Classification is based on content, not on markings. You have to understand that. And Mrs. Clinton, she understands that. She knows it very well. This is the old, I'm taking the fifth. She's not saying anything. She'll deny, deny, deny until the FBI comes at her. Now, it's looking like maybe the FBI is close to something, because they're saying that people working on the case right now are not dragging their feet. They're not getting bored with it. And that's what happens when a case starts to kind of go south, and they start losing their evidence, or things don't come into play, or the puzzle pieces don't connect. The people working on the cases, they get a little withdrawn, and they get a little sour. Well, they're saying these people are amped up and they're ready to go, okay? Even James Comey, he said to Congress, I can assure you that I'm very close to this investigation, and we have all the resources we need, including the people and technology, that it's done the right way. The FBI tries to do all its work the right way, independently, competently, and promptly. So he sounds a lot like he knows what the outcome might be. Of course, we've heard sources say that he would resign if they recommend to indict and the DOJ doesn't. We've heard also people say that various agents would also resign and come forth and tell their story if this situation comes to fruition, which I'm not sure if it will, because if that happens, it would be the biggest story ever. It would be a bigger story than the emails themselves. Now, apparently, the FBI is focusing on these 22 SAP emails, those special access program emails. Those were ones that are ranked higher than top secret. And they're also very concerned about the ones she sent, the 112, whatever it was, emails she sent, knowingly sent, not just received. Of course, she will go and she'll say, oh, well, Cheryl Mills sent it, or Uma Abedin sent it, or Jake Sullivan sent it. They had my cell phone. They sent it for me. I'm already seeing this defense come up. Because she will throw these people in front of her, and these people being the huge Clintonites and really these mental midgets that they are, they will fall on their sword for Hillary Clinton, something a normal person would never do. So that's Hillary Clinton. We got to move on. There's a man named Tim Canova. Tim Canova is a former Bernie Sanders advisor, and what he's doing is he's running in a primary against Debbie Wasserman Schultz in the 23rd district in Florida. People in Florida are not happy about Schultz. They think that she has set up this campaign for Hillary Clinton, and you know what? They wouldn't be wrong. Now, Tim Canova has gotten the endorsement of the National Nurses United Union and the Communications Workers of America. They are both sick of what's going on with the DNC, with Wasserman Schultz. They think she is beholden to big money because she is a big Clinton supporter, and they'd be 100% right. So she's facing this primary. Who knows? You know, when it comes to voting, the Democrats aren't exactly fair, right? They don't want voter ID cards because they don't want, you know, it's people to actually know that they're voting. They can't take names off of tombstones anymore, so they don't want voter ID cards. And plus, they don't want you to know just how few Democrats are out there. That's why they don't want voter ID cards also. But if this thing is close, if this thing is even close, this primary, if I'm Tim Canova, I would definitely be looking for a recount because there will be shenanigans. The DNC always plays shenanigans. You cannot assume that the head of the DNC won't play shenanigans with her own job. That's essentially what this is. If she loses her Congress seat, she'll probably lose the job as the head of the DNC. So that wouldn't be good for her. Now, Speaking of unions, because we were just talking about unions that supported Wasserman Schultz's opponent, the AFL-CIO is trying to use its 12 million members to form a Stop Trump campaign. This coming from Richard Trumka. He's the president of this AFL-CIO. Now, of course, they represent a lot of people. They represent some trade unions in New York City, but for the most part, they're a service workers union, and civil service workers. They are teaming up with the SEIU and the International Association of Machinists. They don't like Donald Trump. Well, listen, nobody likes Donald Trump. That's kind of the way it is right now. But they are in dire straits. They're in big, big trouble because their blue-collar workers are flocking to Donald Trump, flocking to him. This is, you haven't seen this before. And I think we're going to see it when these primaries start getting into the Rust Belt. You're going to see these blue-collar workers really coming out to support Donald Trump. They believe in his cause. They believe in what he represents. They believe in that sort of antithesis to the establishment. And the AFL-CIO, they are big Democrat supporters. They always have been. They give lots and lots of money to the Democratic Party, as does the SEIU, who is also involved in this $15 an hour garbage. They organize these protests. They're not allowed to. They do it anyway, and they get away with it because these protests occur largely in Democrat-run cities. That's a topic for a whole separate day. But the AFL-CIO is going to have a big problem because they're setting up a showdown between their members and the body itself. And now the members will always win because the members are the ones that pay the dues. If they just start saying, hey, listen, you're not listening to us. You know, you don't tell us who to vote for. We tell you who we're voting for. Okay? They're setting up a showdown. And if the members stop paying their dues, well, Mr. Richard Trumka and all of his confidants at the top of the AFL-CIO and SEIU and all these other liberal unions, they are in big trouble. Because that's what they live on. Their money comes from the dues of the worker. If the worker doesn't like what the head of the snake is doing, it just cuts the head off. That's how this works. That's how unions have always worked. They feel like they've gotten so big that it can't happen. But I got news for you. It could happen. And these people are very, very passionate. So to try to stand in their way, using your clout, which is really their presence, the presence of the worker, may not be the best thing in the world. Listen, the AFL-CIO has never made real good political backings. They put a lot of money into it. They ask for a lot of favors. That's how this works with them. Now, Democrats say Trump is easy to beat, right? Republicans say that Democrats want Trump because he's easy to beat. But if that's the case, why are these unions who are largely Democrat trying to stop Trump? Okay, so you have to kind of weed through this a little bit. Maybe Trump isn't as easy to beat as they all think. All right, moving on. We have 3 minutes left. We're going to do this. Now, the FBI is trying to get into the cell phone from the San Bernardino killer. Apple is now warning that if this happens, if they are allowed to help the FBI get into this phone, they are saying it won't stop there. They're saying the FBI will want now to get into access microphones and cameras while you have your phone in your pocket. So we have to keep an eye on this. This is very important. They're going to have a showdown later this month in court. Of course, Apple is supported now by Microsoft, Twitter, Facebook, and Google. So that's all of Silicon Valley against the FBI. All right, you have to check out an article. This is an article from the Libertarian Republic. This is in the You Need to Read segment. It's called Millennials Have Proven to Be Little More Than Entitled, Spoiled, Anti-Intellectual Brats, and Here Are 7 Harsh Realities of Life Millennials Need to Understand. And you need to read this article. It's really good. It's really good, and it tells you all about what these millennials need to know before they start spouting off, because they've been spouting off so much lately. They have listed demands coming out of Washington, coming out of Arizona. Of course, Missouri has a list of demands. They fired that teacher that tried to get the camera guy out of the way. So this is something you need to read. Again, it's the Libertarian Republic. It was published today, and I think you guys will really enjoy it. It's a pretty quick read. It's not too complicated, but they say, you know, listen, your feelings are largely irrelevant if you're a millennial and you're in college. You cannot be whatever you want. Gender studies is a waste of money. If you live in America, you're already the 1%. And then they go on to say that the only safe place you have is in your home, which is about 100% correct. So go ahead, give this this article a read. I think you guys will really like it. I found it on InfoWars. That's Alex Jones's website. But it is on the Libertarian Republic website. So check that out. All right. That's about it, folks. We went through a lot here. We got a lot done today. But everybody have a great weekend. We'll see you on Monday. Monday we have my endorsement coming up, plus I have a big announcement. So in the meantime, thank you to all those who serve our country at home and abroad. Also a huge thank you to those in the law enforcement community. Thank you for all you do. Keep up the hard work. We all depend on you. God bless all of you. God bless all of your families. And until Monday, have a great weekend, everybody. I'm the Rhino, and I'm out.
Been listening to the Rhino Report. Always right. Copyright 2016.